Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood.
Hello, my name's Marek Larwood, and we're rejoined by one of the founding hosts. What's her name?
Her name is Danielle Ward. Hello, Danielle.
Hello.
You're technically a guest, though, I suppose.
That's all right, guest in my own home.
That's right, yeah.
Who is the guest here? Because I'm theoretically a guest.
Yes.
In your house.
This is like a wrestling match where Vince McMahon suddenly comes in and joins in, because even though he owns wrestling, he still gets punched in the face sometimes.
I don't watch wrestling.
I'm sure no one does. We're going to talk about some films and then leave you be. Danielle's brought in a film she's going to talk about, but before that, we've been to the cinema. I have been to see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Me too.
You've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marek...
We went together.
We did go together, let's
so
not lie.
I'm going to question you about it from a listener's perspective.
Okay. Go on, then.
What's it about?
All right, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's the latest in the Marvel Studios films, who have brought us such classics as Iron Man and Thor, The Dark World. This one is... not a superhero film, you'll be pleased to hear.
Yeah.
This one is...
just some guys.
A space opera, the genre pretty much invented by Star Wars. So it is basically, if you can imagine, five Han Solos in a ship flying around trying to save the galaxy.
I want to have sex with all of them.
Yeah, every single one. Well, one of them is a tree, so...
that one first.
Then another's a raccoon. Yes, basically they are a ragtag bunch of misanthropes and rogues who are flung together for selfish gain, and then they realise that actually a whole planet and population could be destroyed if they don't do the right thing, and so they become sort of self-proclaimed guardians of the galaxy in order to help out.
So I understand the plot completely. Is it funny?
It's very
funny.
It is
funny.
Yeah.
It is funny.
Chris Pratt is the lead in it, who plays Peter Quill, also known as Star-Lord. They know how lame that name is. They play up to that. He is from Parks and Rec, which he's
Andy
the
Blair.
Funniest thing in, but he's
do you
brilliant.
Watch Parks and Rec?
No, I watch films.
Okay.
I
he was also
do what you do and start polluting your mind with these endless American sort of sitcoms.
Comedies.
Yeah.
He also played the lead Emmett in the Lego movie.
So that's the one I haven't seen yet. It's supposed to be good. Someone told me the other day it's the best film they've seen of the year.
Okay, interesting. He's very funny. He's instantly likable and very good. Then Zoe Saldana from the Star Trek movies plays a green woman.
She is
Uhura.
Yeah. I can't say Uhura.
Uhura, I think.
Who is your favourite, Danielle?
Out of the people in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Well, oddly enough, probably Bradley Cooper.
What?
That's a thing I never thought I would say.
Is he one of the Guardians?
He's the raccoon.
He voices
really
the raccoon.
Funny and grumpy.
So maybe it's just his face that's not funny, and he's actually funny.
I think he does have a slightly... he's like an underwear model crossed with a man with a punchable face.
I mean, he's no Jeremy Renner.
That's true.
But they're all great, apart from the girl who, just because she isn't given anything. She's,
yeah, it's not her fault. Her character is, you are green.
Her character is, I am really serious and I have to do this thing to do this stuff. And everybody else is being funny.
Everyone else gets to go. Yeah, proper green. And then Vin Diesel voices a walking tree who can only say, I am Groot. But Vin Diesel, I read, recorded that line over 1,000 times for them to use in various different ways.
Yeah, I bet he was getting paid by the hour. That's what they said. He's got to try and make as much, that's what I would do, how to make as much money as possible. Yeah. What is the age group? Is it Sam
interesting
this film?
It's clearly marketed at sort of the family market in that everyone can go and see it like Star Wars is, but they do sort of mild swears in it quite a lot. Like, they say the word dick quite often.
The word dick in it is quite, yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not tiny kidders.
I think anybody who enjoys fun would like it, which I can see why you would hate going to see it, Marek.
Was it 15 or 12?
It's 12.
It's a 12. And it's got lots of sort of comedy cameo, I suppose you'd call them that. But
and there's death in it.
There's
like death. Proper bad guys getting, in fact...
Evil hammers. There's a really evil hammer in it.
There's an evil hammer. And also there's someone... I'm not going to say... Someone dies.
So what is it... Can you watch it at... For its plot, or is it just an out and out comedy?
It's tough. It is hugely enjoyable. It still has the story problems of any of these big, massively orchestrated superhero films where they don't know how to drive the story on with character. So characters are either being characterful or they're just being blandly expositional, and it's one or the other. Okay. But this isn't as bad as some of the other ones.
And also, it's not like an out-and-out comedy that's silly, like The Life of Brian or something. It's a space romp. It just happens to have the characters in it are, they have funny lines of dialogue, but they don't do jokes.
John C. Reilly and Peter Serafinowicz are the sort of the Empire henchmen, almost. Okay. They're good guys, though, I guess. And Glenn Close is the leader of them.
So it's a funny Star Wars.
It's like a funny Star Wars, yeah.
But not like that.
But not like the Family Guy.
Or the one, what was the fame with a Darth Vader with a massive head? Was it called?
Oh, Spaceballs.
Yeah,
it's not a parody pastiche. In fact, looking it up again, all of the characters who, because, like the Avengers or whatever in the comics, apparently the Guardians of the Galaxy have had many different members who have all rotated and blah, 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 whoever it is. And the ones they've used in this all predate Star Wars. So actually these characters were written before 1977, what? When Star Wars came out.
Hang on a minute. This is based on a comic strip?
Yeah, it's based on a comic book.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's another Marvel property that coexists in the world with X-Men and the Avengers and all of that.
Oh, well, I thought it was just another way of them making loads of money. Well, it is another way of making loads of money. But I didn't realise it was a pre-existing comic.
Yeah.
Have you read the comic?
No. I don't read comics, really.
Well, you should, because it's a fascinating new genre, I think.
New?
It's emerging now. It's finally emerging from its superhero... I think the non-superhero comics are actually the most interesting, so they're...
Just the comics about a bloke doing his washing.
Not like that, but like the famous one is like Mouse. You must have read Mouse.
Yeah, but it's over there.
And there's one I read by, it's called Encyclopedia of the World. I haven't talked before, but it's called Isabel Greenberg. It's really, really good. It's like sort of myths and fables, but it really nicely illustrated. And what else did I read? We read one called Madman, which is a great comic book. But anyway,
I've read a couple, but I'm not.
I found it. Don't pull your pants down.
But incidentally...
You have to explain that comment. You have to explain that. You that can't just say, don't pull your pants down and then carry on.
That was directed at Buddy the dog. Do you want to explain what's happened?
Buddy has recently had an operation. Nothing serious.
He's been castrated.
The operation dogs have. And so he is currently wearing a pair of boxer shorts to stop
himself... They're falling down.
Stop himself itching his stitches.
So you've basically... pinned a pair of your boxer shorts around.
Hey, they're perfectly suited. It's got a hole
his
in the front. His tail
can
go through. It's perfect. It's like they were designed for the task. Hello.
They do quite suit him.
They do, don't they?
You could start selling dog pants.
I've said this morning that I think that is a new market. I might go in Dragon's Den because they hate the cone, but you could make some pants for a dog to wear post-operation.
I think that's a really good idea.
Because vets all still give them the cone, yeah. And they're miserable.
They hate the cone.
Well, I had a Great Dane, which was huge. He had the cone. It was a massive cone.
Yeah.
He couldn't barely get through it. Yeah, they don't know what to do they?
Oh, they smash anything that's on a coffee table or surface if they've
but
got the cone.
But you make them a pair of dog pants.
Oh, that's over the recording
that was a dog
device.
Pants. They're falling down now over his feet.
Come here, bud. Do you know what? His willies come out.
I'm sorry to cut there because Buddy's ball protecting pants fell down and they're now they're back on.
And that would have breached our certificate on this podcast. So, yes. But Guardians of the Galaxy. Merrick, are you interested? Because I know you have no interest in the superhero genre anymore. And in some ways, fair enough. Are you interested in the space excitement genre? I mean, Star Wars is obviously the one that's eclipsed all others in this, but the new Star Trek movies sort of have entered into the same territory, and some probably the latter-day Aliens movies, actually. You know, Alien Resurrection was far more a ragtag bunch of pirates in space, you know.
I'm not... I think it's just me being... I know when people write in... sort of suggest all I like is watching just French art films and all that stuff. I'm not particularly interested because I think they just dominate cinema, these films. I mean, if I go and see these films, then I miss out on all the weird foreign dramas and stuff that I like to go and see. You know, not really that many that sort of break through anymore.
But it's quite nice seeing something, you know, dramatic and hyper real in something as big as IMAX, which is where we saw it. Whereas I don't think I'd want to see, you know, Audrey Tautou's face in IMAX. I don't think it would add anything.
Yeah. I just want to see something that hasn't been done before. I think we're going to talk about Ghostbusters later. That was a really exciting new way of having sort of friends, a new idea. It just seems that everything's been slightly rehashed, like a version of Star Wars superhero thing. There's not... I can't remember a really good new
The
idea.
Matrix is the first...
Yeah, the
is
Matrix
the last
good.
One I think that really... Everyone copied since and changed a visual story. You know, it changed how you the visuals they do for movies.
But all the ideas seem the same. Like in the '80s, I think I was watching. We had like Back to the Future, interesting ideas, like Ghostbusters, things like even the horrors of Gremlins had a really nice idea about it. Terminator was a nice twist.
Yeah,
Alien.
Yeah. Well,
Alien
all of them. The '80s
really
were fantastic. I was looking at a list of films that came out in '82 the other day, and it was huge numbers of great ones. The Thing came out then. Rocky, I think, was there. Not that Rocky's a you know a high concept movie, but you know.
And The Thing was a remake.
It was a remake, but it. Boy, what a remake.
These things are all taking stuff from like 50s B-movies, though. And
yeah,
just
that's
kind
true.
Of
I mean, if you look at Indiana Jones, that was rehashing TV shows and adventure comics from the 50s and 40s.
I'll tell you why you wouldn't like Guardians of the Galaxy, and this is the problem I had with it. I was really enjoying it. It was a fun old space romp. Everybody's funny. There's no Mark Hamill type character.
Let's not be unfair. There's no Luke Skywalker type character. It's not Mark Hamill stinking up those movies. He's actually, I prefer to think of Mark Hamill as the definitive Joker, because he's actually made a career of being the Joker in video games and cartoons since, and his Joker is fantastic.
Because of his scar.
Oh, because he's so funny, because of his facial scarring. No.
Well, this is going down a really dark path.
Anyway,
what are you going to say?
I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's really mawkish in a few points. It's pulling on the heartstrings. I don't want that. I just want a romp. I don't want to be made to cry by some strings and someone... my poor family.
Sounds like Derek.
It's not exactly like Derek. I mean, there's no... I haven't watched all of Derek, but I don't think there's a sort of awesome alien tree in it.
Yeah.
It does make a robot dog.
Does he?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, because the real dog dies.
Oh my God.
In Derek, not in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
There's a good space
spoiler
dog
for Derek,
cameo.
But, you know.
Oh, and the weirdest... I don't think this is a spoiler because it's not plot at all, but the weirdest post-credits sequence I have ever seen in any of these. You know, it's now a staple of Marvel films that if you stay to the end
don't
of the credits...
Don't give it away. That,
really?
A nice surprise.
Is it
just
a nice surprise?
Just help people just stay to the end.
Yeah, stay
but
till the end.
I mean, it's weird, though. It's
it
not...
It is so strange that they've decided to do this.
Because normally they set up what's coming in the future,
yes.
Don't they? I was expecting it to be... Angry Nick and Jimmy Bobo
tussling. And Angry Nick kissing by a fire or something. But no, really odd. Anyway, okay, I won't spoil it, but really, really odd. It made me go straight to Google to go, what?
Maybe they're trying to hypnotise you or something. That'd be quite a good way of doing it.
I didn't think it was that funny.
Oh, okay. No.
I would just have gone for a wee at least 2 minutes earlier.
Oh, so leave at the soon as the credits finish, leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a nice little bit. Anyway, it's fun. It's really fun.
How many Davids and Danielle?
That's tricky because I am a story Nazi and it's
hang on a
story,
minute.
Not a real one. And I don't, and it didn't do that well with that stuff. It was a bit meandery set PC, but the dialogue was really funny and
Chris Pratt's brilliant.
He's brilliant. And actually, I thought Dave Bautista, who's the wrestler in it, who plays Drax the Destroyer, was really funny. And all the characters were great, apart from the ladies who were given nothing to do.
Oh,
Karen Gillan's in it as a baddie, who's painted blue, and her character is, you're painted blue.
Also, though, she does this a lot, which what? I hate.
You have to describe that.
Describe that expression. Robert.
Right, so if you're a lady actress and you are asked to portray slightly weird evil, you do the slight head tilt and you sort of move your neck forward, a bit like the girl in the ring.
You Kate Bush, basically, don't you?
Yeah, you...
And then if you want to be really evil, you raise your arms from the shoulders first.
Okay.
Kate Bushing.
She's not very... I mean, she doesn't have a character, because the villain is really po-faced and not funny at all. And she also is po-faced and not funny.
I worked out who the villain is.
Who is it?
He is the lead in The Fall, that incredibly beautiful but ultimately boring film.
Is he?
So, yeah.
Oh, I like that.
It's nice to know they're getting work somewhere. So
yeah.
What marks are you going to give it?
What do you think, Danielle?
As an experience, as a big, enjoyable romp at the IMAX, which I love, I'd give it 4 Danielles.
Why not? Mate? We're doing 10. 10.
Oh,
you've forgotten the system.
I've forgotten the system. Well, in that case, I would give it 8.5.
Oh. I think I'd give it 8.
I say it's worth going to see. I think I've heard a lot of good things about it online. So
it's better than Avengers Assemble.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
High praise indeed.
Yes, very.
There's attempts at humour that fail in Avengers Assemble, and these are just funny characters.
Yeah, just as funny.
You know, they really try and make Captain America funny, and he's not, is he?
Oh,
poor man.
He's not like Captain America.
Dull. Dull
yeah.
as shit.
Okay.
We're going to play our casting game now.
Woo! Oh, God. I need to think of people.
What is it we're casting, David?
Well, there have been rumours abound for about the last 10 years, but they've certainly been hotting up recently that there is indeed going to be a Ghostbusters 3. But the latest rumours suggest that they are actually going to be bringing in a brand new Ghostbusters team with only sort of mentor roles played by Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, if he ever does do it. Obviously, Harold Ramis is now dead. So, we are going to cast an all-female Ghostbusters...
Reboot.
Well, not reboot, but next one. Next generation. Ghostbusters, the next generation.
So, we're going to have the same... We'll just say, like, who's going to play Bill Murray character?
No, right? No. That's not what we're doing.
So, who's going to play the grumpy one? Who's going to play the
We're
going
to do 3 each, and Danielle, as our guest, is
who's
going
to
pick
the black one?
Her favourite 3 out
that's
of
That's the 4 for it. I've not done the black one.
What?
I don't think that's an issue anymore. I don't mean you can say that.
Really?
Yeah. You've got to say the guy's been... was he in prison or something?
Ernie Hudson?
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. You're thinking of a different black gentleman.
Okay. Now, in the film, he's in prison, isn't he? They're all in prison.
They're all in prison, and that's Ghostbusters 2.
Okay. Well, there we go. I'm racist.
Wow. Okay,
Isn't there a disabled one? Or is that the real Ghostbusters cartoon?
That's Rick Moranis. He's not disabled.
Isn't there a transsexual?
That's the Gorny Weaver.
She's just androgynous.
Okay, let me consult my list.
So, Danielle, how are you going to ask for these?
Just say Hal Ramis, Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd.
No, that's not what we're doing.
What I would like is 3 lady Ghostbusters that fulfil different character types.
Great.
Okay. So, my Bill Murray sort of character...
No.
That's fine.
I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to do it this way.
Okay.
In my favourite comedy actress, I think she'll bring a different thing to
it.
Oh,
I think I've picked the same person.
It's Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, I've picked her as well.
What, is Bill Murray?
No, just as being in it.
As the grumpy misanthrope always on the pull.
No, I think Melissa McCarthy, McCartney.
She's a cross between Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray.
Yeah, I think she's a Dan Aykroyd, actually.
Okay.
I think,
but this is why Marek's system is not what we're doing.
Okay.
You know, we're just picking three funny.
So we both
actresses.
Picked the same one then.
Yes, but I am. Yeah, well, she's on my list.
Who else have you got, Marek? Or does it go to David now?
It goes to me now.
All
I
right,
think.
Well, you've got Melissa McCarthy.
Marek said it first, so I'll have to pick someone else.
Oh,
how about
really?
That?
Is that how it works?
Well, otherwise, you know, we're just going to get a tie, and that would be intolerable. I'm going to go for. Okay, we need someone rather different to Melissa McCarthy. I think someone who is excellently funny and should get more film.
Hang on a minute. What? How's this even working? You're picking three and I'm picking three and they're going to pick the best. I mean,
she's going to pick the best three.
I pick the best
and
three.
And it's almost like a picking at football where you get to pick first and you get to pick your one, so I can't pick the same one as you, right?
Yeah.
That's how you always do the casting game, isn't it?
That's what we've just done. Yeah.
No, but you can't pick Melissa McCarthy
I've
then.
Just said that.
So who's your one then? Because you didn't have to go. Yours,
well, I was in the middle of saying that, Marek, if you'd listen.
I wanted to explain the rules. Things have got very tense.
This is the first time you've ever played this game.
No, it's changed a bit. And I think the seven listeners would agree with me. So this has been slightly sort of warped into something else.
Not really. You've been told the rules from the beginning. I've told you a week ago. And,
come on, the rules are pick three ladies. I mean,
yeah,
how hard
it.
Is
no,
that?
No, but we can't pick the same ones. And we're picking one each at a time.
Yeah.
Okay, who's your first one?
I am going to go for someone who, when she's been in films, has been fantastic and should be in more, Amy Poehler.
Oh, okay, yeah. She's good. She's not very good in that one with the baby.
The every comedian does
what's
a rubbish film.
That's Meryl Streep, isn't it? Didn't
no.
go start my baby.
Actually, it's not Amy Poehler's one. She's not very good. The one where Tina Fey tries to have a baby with Amy Poehler.
Oh, but Tina Fey's brilliant and she's done a load of duff films.
Yeah, I was going to say due date, that's not what it's called.
Okay, so you've got Amy Poehler. I'm going to go...
I love Amy Poehler.
...for someone who was in one of my favourite indie films last year, which is called Safety Not Guaranteed. She played like a good Egon character. It's quite sarcastic. Aubrey Plaza.
She's in Parks and Rec as well.
She plays Chris Pratt's wife.
Rec, sorry for swearing.
Yeah.
Amy Poehler's in... Are we just casting Parks and Rec?
Apparently,
who
yeah.
Who have you got next?
Well, obviously...
Rashida Jones.
No. She made my shortlist.
Really?
But I'm going to go for... We need a different type. We've got some kind of, cuddly and friendly people now. I think we need a bit more of a mentor figure, someone with a bit more edge, but who is still funny, so can do all of that, roles. Diana Rigg,
the 90-year-old.
Yeah.
Diana Rigg's 90 years old, mate.
That would be funny.
Oh, she's practically a ghost herself.
Yeah.
Well, there's some plot for you already. It's writing itself, guys. I'm feeling it.
Diana Rigg's not funny.
She is. I think she's very
what
funny.
What the hell's going on? She's 90 years old, mate.
She's brilliant. She can do no wrong.
Well, I'm pleased because I'm going to win. For my Dan Aykroyd sort of character... Kristen Schaal.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm gonna pick. Oh, this is tricky from the people left on my list.
Just with Avalon, you'd have to send the contract to Avalon.
Oh God.
Wouldn't be worth it.
Oh God.
This is tough. This is tough.
The tension is mounting. Everyone listening at the gym or going for a walk.
Or just
who
having a wee.
Who is it
going
to be? I wish I'd cast it. Mine would have been better.
Who would you have picked?
Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock.
Just cast the heat then?
Yeah.
And who else?
That's it. Just the heat. The heat with proton pack.
Sandra Bullock just holds a mirror.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm going to pick Sandra Bullock.
What? No!
You can't do that.
She'd be great, though. She's very funny.
She is very funny.
I mean,
she's
half your Ghostbusters are practically dead now.
Well,
so
this is... I'm feeling the need today.
People
no,
is...
I'm going to pick someone who's a bit younger to mix it up then.
Yeah.
So I can get Diana Rigg on that, you know, on that roster. I'm going to pick Emma Stone.
No, boring.
You don't like Emma Stone?
Yeah, really dull. So your picks are Emma Stone, Diana Rigg, and someone, Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler.
Versus Melissa McCarthy, Aubrey Plaza, and Christian Schaal.
Yeah.
I've won.
Do I get to pick my three favourites?
Well, yes. It's
Melissa McCarthy, Amy Poehler, and Aubrey Plaza. So
I have one.
He has one.
Plaza.
Plitzer.
Aubrey Plitzer. I was going to pick Sigourney Weaver and then thought we both would have done that, so didn't. Just as, you know, she can head up the new team, experience of it.
Forgot she was in it.
Do you really think Diana Rigg is going to be running round with a vacuum cleaner on her back?
It's a different dynamic, isn't it? She's at home. She's at home with the big monitor going.
Is she
going
to be like the Simon Pegg figure?
No, Simon Pegg figure? How is he the archetypical mentor? He plays an engineer in Star Trek.
Mentor, computer guy.
No, she was...
From Mission Impossible.
She was going to be the Professor X figure. You know,
she's 76 years old. I reckon she's lied about her age as well.
I have nothing against her age. I just don't think she's funny.
I do. I think she's brilliant.
Based on Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones and, you know, the Avengers, as in original Avengers.
She's not funny in that.
I like her.
I think she's funny in that.
I do.
Well, I mean, I don't know how this is going to sound always.
I'd have Katie Wicks in it, but, you know.
Yeah, but...
You can't cast people... Has she been in films?
Has she been in films?
Yeah.
Good. What films?
She was in Magicians, which I was in as well.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Yeah, you're right.
Jessica Hines, she would have been good.
Oh, Jess is good, yes.
Okay, let's talk too late. I think this game's spinning out of control into some sort of hell pit.
So who won then?
Marek won.
What were your choices? Or you picked the cast of Parks and Rec.
And Melissa McCarthy.
Who's, I'm sure, probably guested on Parks and Rec at some point.
Don't know.
If you would like to email in to tell us what you think of our selections or ask us questions about film, you can do so, right?
Yes. DearFilmFandango@gmail.com or go to Facebook and write on our wall /FilmFandango, or you can tweet us at Mr. David Reed, at Marek Larwood, at Captain Ward if you want to talk to Danielle.
Or at
FilmFandango. And we do all of this nonsense for free. So if you would like to contribute to our running costs so we can keep doing it every week, then please do so. Go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there. And everyone who has done, thank you.
I can't believe I left before the money started coming in.
yeah
millions of
big
pounds.
Big leagues.
You've made us watch a film this week.
Yes, I have.
What
the
did you pick?
The film is the cult classic Ross Meyer film, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which I love, and I saw it for the I think I must have been about 13. I saw it on, it was one of those films that late night Channel 4 used to show. And I was turning on and I only saw the last 20 minutes of it and was like, what the fuck is going on here? Because that's what happens in the last 20 minutes. And so, and having been in some 60s influenced bands, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was always our, like, our go-to weird 60s thing to watch. And it is about, basically it was meant to be a sequel to Valley of the Dolls, which I love. The book is brilliant. The film is fine. Which is about some three girls. It's a bit like Sex and the City. They go around knobbing off people.
Knobbing off?
That's a good expression for it.
They take a lot of drugs. The dolls are drugs. And there's uppers and downers and all this sort of stuff. And it's about a decadent lifestyle in LA.
Oh, the dolls are drugs?
Yeah.
I thought the dolls were the ladies who were dressed up and treated like objects.
No, dolls are the drugs. They're the uppers and the downers and the bits in betweeners.
Oh. So what is this film about then?
This film is about a girl band who are lovely and naive, and they go on the road and then they realise that one of them has got an auntie who lives in LA and she's got loads of money, so they go and visit her and they play a gig at this house, and there's a Svengali producer there called Z-Man, and he is loosely based on Phil Spector, rather prophetically. And he makes them into like a really big band, and they're really cool cats, and they're really famous. And it's about how being famous ruins your life, really, because it makes you be horrible to people, and then they jump off
It's about the descent, moral descent
moral
in LA,
descent
isn't
in
it?
The face of fame.
But that is more coherent an explanation than the film is itself, isn't it, man?
Yeah.
Well, it's,
I love the film. It's like it's a proper 60s weird psych film. It's got the Strawberry Alarm Clock, the band that are playing in the background of the party at the Strawberry Alarm Clock, who are a proper real band.
So you should talk. What should we talk about the language first of all? Do you want to talk about?
Sure. It's written by. Is it Roger Ebert?
Yeah, the famous critic.
And this is. Is it the only thing he's written? Actually, that's a thing to look up. Mm. But it's. The dialogue is highly stylized, and at times is laughably ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's like all kind of cat and groovy and stuff because Valley of the Dolls was done properly, like a proper melodrama, but it's the same sort of language, and it's all, and everybody's having a traumatic time, and their hair looks amazing. And Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, when the writer, is it Jacqueline Suzanne, who wrote Valley of the Dolls, she didn't want to be associated with the screenplay of this. She didn't think it was a very good film. And so they ended up making it more stupid.
And they added a disclaimer on all the posters and trailers and at the beginning of the film saying, this is not a sequel to The Valley of the Dolls. He wrote one other movie called Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens.
Oh, wow.
It's a bit like Scooby-Doo, but with people getting their tits out.
Yes. But it's a satire, and so it's the same way. You know when some people see Starship Troopers and they go, it's really stupid and the dialogue's awful, and that's what it is. This is like, I can imagine this film was a huge influence on Verhoeven, because it's got boobies in it, done for pleasure, but also it's a hugely satirical swipe at those sorts of melodramatic, stupid films that came before it.
My concern watching it is a weird, weird film. It's so all over the place, and then
directed by Russ Meyer. We should probably say as well, who was a pornographer before this movie. This was the first sort of studio-funded movie he directed.
Things happen in one scene, like a whole film's worth of story will happen in the course of 2 minutes.
Like, dizzyingly fast, isn't it?
Just like, there's your former fiance. He's got a new fiance now. Oh, he's coming over. Actually, I still love you. Will you marry me?
Yeah.
But that's satire. I think that is intended
is
to be comically...
Is it all intentional? That's what my one thing...
When they read the script, they thought it was really silly and funny. All the actors were like, so what should we do? And they didn't want to ask Ross Meyer because he was considered quite a big director. And Roger Ebert said, play it straight. Just don't take the piss. You've got to play it straight. And so he got them to perform a very, very stupid script entirely straight, but the intention was always to cut it as a comedy.
And it's very apparent when you watch it that this influenced Rocky Horror Picture Show, which came 3 years later, I think. And I've read some trivia on IMDb, and the cast of Rocky Horror were actually shown this film and told this is the acting style we're going for.
Was Barbarella a bit like this before this or not?
Yeah, but I think Barbarella is played straight, but it's that sort of... This is satirising all of those sort of sexy... Hey, we're all having a great time, but oh, it's the melodrama. It's that daytime soap version.
Do you think it's
of acting.
It's parody then?
Yeah.
So it's the Hot Shots of its day.
I think it is.
Did you find it funny?
I think bits of it are funny.
The ending is incredible, and I know of one place that is sort of homaged or stolen, depending on your generosity. The reveal at the end.
The whole. I texted David halfway through watching the film. I think I wrote something sort of really profound, like this is fucking shit.
Yeah, that was it. I think.
And you said this one. You just watch the last 15 minutes is incredible.
Yeah.
At least you feel like you've watched something different, I suppose.
Also,
I didn't enjoy it, though.
The last 15 minutes was a tack-on. That isn't how the original script ended.
Okay.
And it was inspired by the Manson family killings.
Of course, yes.
Sharon Tate was in the original Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, right,
so by the time they were beyond the Valley of the Dolls, she was already dead.
Wow, it's a bit close, isn't it, to do that?
It is.
A bit red. Just so you know, Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, it seems like the follow-up to Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, because it was written by Roger Ebert and Russ Meyer and directed by Russ Meyer, so they tried to do the same thing again, to less success.
I really love it. It reminds me a bit of Tommy. It's that sort of you just got to sit back and let it wash over you. Don't try and get the plot. Don't, like, there's so many ridiculous set pieces that it's the sort of thing that everybody creative should watch, because there's loads of stuff you can nick.
It does feel like it's something that it'll always be in history, because it just sums up that time.
Yeah.
And that that really experimental time. In fact, you could do this and get this money put into this film, and it, even though it's not intentional, some of it, it's so stuck at that time period.
Yeah. I mean, there's bits that I absolutely love, like the suicide attempt is brilliant. That's just...
Yeah, it's a wonderful piece of cinema, that. It's influenced, you know, the aesthetic of Austin Powers and stuff as well. I know it's not just the era that influenced that. There are party scenes where you go, they've just watched this and sort of tried to recreate it.
Yeah, and, like, you know, if you've seen things like The Trip as well, like that kind of 60s psych film, they're all like this. They're all really weird and...
Mm.
But this one's great because it's satirical, but also the end is... I love the first time I saw this film all the way through. I was like, this is like, the ending's brilliant.
They show the start of the end at the start of the film. Then you just think, what's
going on?
If they hadn't done that, though, you wouldn't believe it knew where it was going at all, because there's a lot of meandering around in the middle.
Just do a 10-minute film, put the end bit of section at the start, so people look at this, like, you've tied it together, and the rest of it can be bullshit. Yeah,
but that happens a lot.
But I do really like Valley of the Dolls. I mean, I guess, like, as someone who loves the book, and because there's many adaptations of Valley of the Dolls as well, that's why I find it really enjoyable, because it's such a weird place to take the original story. So, but I guess if you're not into Valley of the Dolls, is a book I read when I'm really sad. It's great. It's like Jackie Collins. It's just basically, it's one of those things that if you're feeling really sad about yourself or your career, read Valley of the Dolls, because everybody's having a much worse time.
It reminds me, this film, of Showgirls.
Yes, I love Showgirls.
Verhoeven, again, bringing him up again. But it's a naive girl with dreams coming to a town that's more powerful than her, and it will just bring her down into this mire.
I think it's like a Los Angeles version of Trainspotting.
Do you?
No.
No. Okay.
That would be a good double billing, though, to watch two drugs films.
Do you reckon this is a drugs film?
A little bit.
There's drugs in it. It's a hedonism film, isn't it?
Well, maybe, yeah.
Maybe this with Spring Breakers or something.
Yeah. Anyway, it was interesting, but I did still hate it.
Well, now you've seen it. So when Will Ferrell is in the...
Yes, they're doing the film at the making of it.
Yeah. So you see?
What's that?
It's good you've seen it. Will Ferrell's going to be playing Ross Meyer in a film about the making of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Is John C. Reilly being Roger Ebert?
I hope so.
He must be. He's always in these sort of 60s, 70s films.
I think my favourite Will Ferrell film is Step Brothers. I think it's underrated, but it's brilliant.
Can I tell you what films that I didn't... See, if I'd known you were going to borrow the DVD, I'd have picked something else.
What would you have picked?
Bad Timing. I've been wanting to do Bad Timing for ages. It's a Nicholas Rogue film. It's got stars Art Garfunkel and Teresa Russell and Denham Elliott.
I love Denham
and
Elliott.
And it's so brilliant. And especially if you've seen Performance and The Man Who Fell to Earth, which are also Nick Rogue films starring pop stars, the performance he gets out of Art Garfunkel is incredible. It's really sad. It's just about a mutually destructive relationship. It's an incredible film. It's really hard to get hold of. Like, I got that from like some weird video shop down in Brighton that then closed.
You want sex film?
It's like that. I love it so much. If I know you can bloody borrow it, I'd have picked that instead rather than Beyond the Valley of the Dead, which I do love, but you know.
Probably because last time I borrowed a film, I kept it for 6 months.
Yeah, and you didn't even watch it, did you?
I watched half it, then I got annoyed.
It's a long film.
Yeah.
But the ending's beautiful.
You can't always wait till the end, Danielle.
Well, I think that's it for this week. Thanks for coming along. Is there anything you want to plug?
How many people do you reckon it'll go out to?
This?
15 million.
Million squillions.
Million squillions.
Your podcast.
When are you doing? When are you putting this out? Is
this week? Today?
I'm at the Fringe. Oh, please come along. So I'm doing a show at the Fringe. It's fun. It's not got a story or a structure. No one fucking dies in it. I don't show a picture of my nan at the end under some breakbeats. It's just me. I've written some songs on GarageBand and I've written a story, and then I'm just going to add some other things as well. And it's called Danny Frankenstein Shut Up and Dance. It's on at midday, so nothing else is on then, and it's free, and it's only 40 minutes long. Don't come if you're a fucking reviewer. It's not for you. It's for real people, and it's really fun. Oh, God, I hate the Fringe.
There you go. Go to see Danny at the Edinburgh Festival.
Danny Frankenstein Shut Up and Dance.
10th to the 16th of August at midday at the Voodoo Rooms.
There we go. Right, well, we'll be back next week with more films.
Hey, everyone.
Keep watching the films. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.